From the KTOO newsroom in Juneau, I'm Yvonne Cromery. Dozens of friends and family gathered last night at the shore of Mendenhall Lake in Juneau to hold a candlelight vigil for Paul Jose Rodriguez Jr. Rodriguez drowned last week when his kayak capsized on the lake. The ceremony is quiet, with the rushing water of Nugget Falls in the background. The candles in the hands of the adults and children gathered grow brighter as the day begins to darken around 10 p.m. Michelle Tagabon leads the ceremony.
The search for Paul is a continuing effort, and we are sensitive to the knowing that he is here.
The search for Rodriguez's remains is ongoing. Dan Ewing is a pastor at Calvary Fellowship Church in Juneau. He's known Rodriguez for 17 years. He leads those gathered in a prayer.
God, there's so many here tonight that are frustrated and confused, that are heartbroken, that their worlds have been blown up and torn apart.
He says Rodriguez is loved by all he met.
Probably the most loyal person I've ever met. I mean, honestly, like, if you need something, he's there. Adventurous, up for anything. Just a fun guy.
Rodriguez was known in the community for his photography. He used his drone to take striking photos and videos of Juneau's landscapes, including many of the Mendenhall Glacier. He leaves behind a 20-year-old son, Jaden.
Loved people, loved life, loved God, loved Jaden, and Jaden was his life. So.
Rodriguez was last seen more than a week ago. On Tuesday, he posted on Facebook that he was kayaking to the glacier. His kayak was found capsized Tuesday night, according to state troopers, but he wasn't reported missing until Sunday. Video evidence recovered from a GoPro belonging to Rodriguez confirms that he drowned after his kayak capsized. In Juneau, I'm Yvonne Crumery. And Alaska Attorney General Treg Taylor signed a letter last month supporting states' rights to access medical information about abortion and gender-affirming care. The letter was addressed to the U.S. Secretary of Health and Human Services and was signed by 18 other state attorney generals. It's a response to the Biden administration's proposed protections of patient privacy when crossing state lines for medical care. The letter says protections would obstruct, quote, states' ability to enforce their laws on abortion, and it airs concerns that the proposed protections might advance, quote, radical transgender policy goals if applied to gender-affirming care. Rose O'Hara Jolly is the Alaska State Director for Planned Parenthood Alliance Advocates. They say the Attorney General's job is to protect all Alaskan rights, including the right to abortion.
Releasing medical records is not a state's rights issue, it's a personal rights issue, and we have the right to speak with our medical professionals without government interference.
Alaskans' right to abortion are protected in the state constitution. In an email, Taylor acknowledged this. He said the letter is, quote, about preserving the state's rights in the face of federal overreach. O'Hara Jolly says Planned Parenthood has already gotten many calls and emails from Alaskans worried that their rights have changed. They worry the letter will mean people don't feel comfortable being open with their medical care providers.
Our biggest concern is that now people will be afraid to talk to doctors and medical professionals or will think that they are unable to get care. What he's done has put the health and safety of all Alaskans in jeopardy.
In his email, Attorney General Taylor said the state will not seek out medical information from other states. And he said Alaska is not planning to provide medical information to other states, even if medical privacy laws change. And a federal judge has dismissed the state of Alaska's lawsuit against the federal government over contamination on Alaska Native Corporation lands. Assuming the judgment stands, it prevents one avenue for forcing a solution to a decades-long saga. The problem centers on dump sites, fuel depots, and other polluted sites on land the federal government transferred to Alaska Native Corporations as part of the 1971 Land Claims Settlement Act. Jason Bruni is commissioner for the Department of Environmental Conservation, the state agency that brought the lawsuit.
There were well over 1,000 contaminated sites that were conveyed as part of the 44 million acre, quote, settlement for dealing with indigenous land claims. And they were given damaged goods.
The lawsuit claimed the U.S. Interior Department didn't fulfill a congressional mandate to address the contamination. U.S. District Court Judge H. Russell Holland said Congress required the Interior Department's Bureau of Land Management to create a remediation plan, not to carry it out. The judge also said the state has no standing to sue. A state press release accuses the government of, quote, evading responsibility. It quotes Governor Mike Dunleavy calling the judge's decision a, quote, maddening excuse. Of the known contaminated sites on Native Corporation land, only about half have been cleaned up. It would take an estimated $50 billion to remediate all of them. Congress last year appropriated $27 million to the job, spearheaded by the Environmental Protection Agency. Tammy Fordham directs the EPA's operations in Alaska. This year, Fordham says, five Native organizations applied for the money to address seven contaminated sites.
Our whole commitment on this is to learn and adapt, and I think there'll be, I'm sure, others coming in for projects and looking to really help accelerate cleanup of contaminated lands in Alaska.
Meanwhile, Alaska Attorney General Treg Taylor says the state is studying the judge's order for possible appeal. Southeast Alaska's House District 2 Representative Rebecca Hemshoot wrapped up her first legislative session in May. The session ended with weeks of negotiation over the state's budget. Lawmakers approved a one-time allocation for education, $680 per student. When Governor Mike Dunleavy signed the budget into law a few weeks later, he vetoed $200 million, including half of that one-time education funding. Representative Hemshoot sat down with KFSK's Hannah Floor to discuss how the session played out.
The number one thing I hear about in communities across the district is ferry service, and he did cut $10 million out of the budget for ferries. I'm not 100% clear what that $10 million was supposed to do, but it operated as some kind of a backstop in case the federal funding doesn't come through. And Senator Stedman could speak more clearly about it, but my understanding is as long as the federal funding comes through, that will not negatively impact us for now. So I was really worried when I saw a cut to ferries, but it sounds like that cut won't be as dire as it sounded like at first. The impact that I am absolutely certain will be felt in House District 2 and across the state is the 50% slash to the education funding that the legislature approved. And that, you know, specifically in Petersburg, for better or for worse, the budget for 24 did not include an increase from the state, I guess, recognizing the risk of budgeting on money that wasn't yet approved. But districts like Sitka did plan on a certain amount coming from the state, and now they're having to revise down and look at cuts. You know, it's well over 80% of a school district's budget is personnel. So at this point, so late in the game, districts across the region and across the state have to decide, do we cut educators that we've committed to, or do we cut programs that we know benefit kids? And that's really what makes up a school district. There's no way to cut the education budget without impacting students.
I'm curious what's happening in the legislature that you're worried could have the most negative impact on your constituents.
I think a really big risk that we're facing right now is the recognition that a broad-based tax is likely necessary in the state. And I think a lot of us are sort of reckoning with that. None of us is excited about it. But as the legislature and the governor discuss what kind of broad-based tax is appropriate or the right fit for Alaska, I see a battle coming over sales tax versus income tax. So if a tax is required in my rural district, the least harm would be done through an income tax rather than a sales tax. And the way I explain that is if you're paying $5 for a gallon of milk in Anchorage in places like Petersburg, that price is going to be quite a bit higher. And then if you go even further away to places like Angoon or Cake or Tenneke, those prices could be twice what Anchorage pays. And so a sales tax really impacts our communities.
What is making you hopeful right now?
The fact that we're, I hope, closer than ever to actually looking at the structural deficit the state is facing. As painful as that conversation has been and is going to be, it's a necessary conversation. And so it's maybe not the right word to say. I'm hopeful that we'll have that hard conversation, but I don't think Alaska can move forward without it. And so I'm ready for that conversation. And I guess the hope for me is that we bring our best intentions to the table and go through the difficult conversation and come up with solutions so that we're not underfunding education and so that our state agencies aren't strangled with flat funding year after year after year in the face of inflation.
That was Alaska State Representative Rebecca Hemshute of House District 2. You're listening to KTOO.